It's the Popmatic Podcast for November 2nd, 2016. It's the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I'm Jeremy, and I approve this message, along with...
Amanda.
Senator Mike.
Sarah.
Bill.
The good gentleman from Kentucky is going to yield the floor to the introduction. Fun fact! The Founding Fathers put Election Day so close to Halloween as an act of voter suppression, the hope being that everyone would be in a sugar coma and unable to make it to the polls. And by everyone, I mean rich white landowners. Thankfully, things have changed. Today, we get small d Democratic and talk about the election in a fair and balanced way. Because if there's one thing we can all agree on, it's that this election is fun to talk about. Bill, you report and we'll decide what we think on this thing you're going to talk about.
Okay.
I feel better about my hosting last week.
Talk about burn card. How do we sleep while our
beds are burning? Today, I want to talk about just a common, ordinary, simple savior of America's destiny, Pat Paulson. I know what a lot of you are saying. Who?
I was. That was my thought.
Let me back up. On CBS from 1967 to 1969, I remember this show that gives you an indication of my age. There was a comedy variety show called the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour. This show appealed to contemporary youth of America with political satire humor that rubbed the White House and the establishment the wrong way. Even though it was a major hit, CBS pulled or canceled it from their schedule. In the library, there is a book called Dangerously Funny, The Uncensored Story of the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour by Daniel Bianculli, if you're interested. On the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour was a little-known comedian and satirist by the name of Pat Paulson. Pat Paulson was a dour-faced man who had the deadest of deadpan deliveries. In other words, the less he did, the funnier he got. In 1968, the Smothers Brothers asked Pat Paulson to run for president. He ran his campaign, or alleged campaign, with humor and double talk. His presidential campaign was, "If elected, I will win," or, "I'm neither left wing or right wing, I'm middle of the bird." He responded to criticism of his campaign with catchphrase, "Picky, picky, picky." So, on our online, on Hoopla, you can stream Pat Paulson for President, his CD. We also have on Hoopla Pat Paulson's Half a Comedy Hour, the complete series, which was a summer replacement show that he did, and it was hilarious. I remember that, too. And finally, on DVD, we have the Smothers Brothers, the best of season 3 in our collection. So why don't you give Pat Paulson a chance this election season? Or to quote Pat Paulson, "We have nothing to fear but fear itself, and of course the boogeyman." Sarah?
I can't say that I remember the show, obviously, because I am not that old. But I've definitely heard of that show. My parents have told me about it, how politically it was very kind of, I don't know, first of the road kind of thing.
Like, oh, yes, very much so.
It was on Nick at Night for a little while.
They have those infomercials, too, where they go through, like, every episode just to get you to buy the entire series.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Time Life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember the days?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I was a kid in the 80s, one of the Smothers Brothers would only be known for the yo-yo guy.
Yeah.
It's like, there's the yo-yo guy and his other brother.
And there was, on MeTV, they're re-airing those shows on Monday nights.
Oh, that's really?
Cool. Yeah, they did this past Monday. And so you can watch, you know, they're showing just one of them on Monday nights.
Cool beans. Okay. First off, the word politics cannot pass through my eardrums and connect with my brain without this famous Mel Brooks phrase, politics, 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 politics. If you don't know what that's referenced from, then clearly you don't know your world history and haven't seen the most educational film of all time, The History of the World, Part 1.
Uh-huh.
Go and re-educate yourself immediately. But to get right down to business, the funny business, huh? This was a tough week to narrow down my options with so many political shows on TV and movies coming out. It was hard to find something really worth talking about. But I tried to find something I hope most viewers do not already know about. And if you do, well, tough, you'll have to hear about it again. I chose a book that I'm admitting ahead of time I haven't fully read yet.
Welcome to the club.
It's called Assassination Vacation by Sarah Vowell. But the reviews for this book are commendable, and a friend of mine once recommended this one to me saying I'd like it. I don't know if he thinks I'm morbid or just that I'd like this story, but for whatever reason, he's right. I do like this book and intend to finish reading it. I don't regularly read books that discuss politics because if I was having trouble sleeping, I'd just take a pill. But if you add a little humor to politics, which let's face it, that's easy to do, then yes, serve me up a plate of that nonsense. And that's what Val does here. And did I mention I will read anything by a fellow Sarah as long as she spells the name right? With an H for crying out loud. That's right. But
that's the real the hot wire in this political debate.
To H or not H.
That's right. That's the question.
I got a friend who's no H, and she's like, what do you mean H?
Yep.
Let me get my friend Nicole on the case.
Doesn't H make you, like, isn't that mean a princess? Like, isn't that the difference? I think Sarah with an H means is princess.
I'm not sure. Really? But I've worked here 5 years, and every time people spell my name, it always without an H. I'm like,
I would. I default to H.
Yeah, I do too.
That's
yeah,
just me.
Because it's cooler.
Yeah. Anyway.
I like more letters.
The H is a space holder for no sound, and it's vital to the pronunciation. That's what I say. And guess what? This chick does. That's how she spells her name. She has released several other books historically related, and all with unique covers created using figurines. Similar to the book Lies My Teacher Told Me, they all appear to take a different path to explaining history, and preferably hoping to explain U.S. history in a new light. Including Assassination Vacation, where she travels around the country visiting tourist sites that are iconic to the presidents that were murdered, Lincoln, McKinley, and Garfield, but she strangely doesn't include Kennedy. I'm not really sure why. I'll find
out. Too obvious, I think.
Yeah. She often includes commentary over her own life and her stories and what these acts and events have meant for her personally, but also for our contemporary society. Not to mention she includes little non-relevant anecdotes of experiences she has along the way. And from what I can also tell with most of her stories, they seem to be told as a journey. She starts out with a question and by the end of the book has hoped to fully uncover the truth. It also includes plenty of sarcasm, if you speak that language. If so, I recommend you put it on hold or any of her other books.
Nice burn.
Evidently. Listening to them is the way to go because several of the audiobooks include voices by some pretty cool celebrities, such as Nick Offerman, Patton Oswalt, Keanu Reeves, and ironically Donald Trump.
Kung Fu,
just kidding.
Said Chester A. Arthur.
Another fun fact about Sarah Vowell, her voice might sound familiar to you if you've ever seen the movie The Incredibles.
Oh.
She voices the character of Violet in the movie, daughter of the Incredibles.
Violet? It's not my fault! Dash ran away and I knew I'd get blamed for it and
Dash,
I thought he tried to sneak on the plane so I came
said,
and you closed the door for I could find him
one.
And you took off and
it's not my fault!
So if you want to get your political history on or just watch The Incredibles take down Syndrome from destroying the world, the library has both for your diverse tastes. Mike, what you got?
I love Sarah Vowell.
Yeah, I read Assassination Vacation like, I think 10 years ago or something. I really liked it.
Yeah, it's 2005, I think, is when it was released.
It was amazing.
Didn't you go on an Assassination Vacation?
I did.
I went to go see.
Have you done the same?
Well, I mean, I went to a bunch of like Lincoln sites in Illinois.
Nice.
It was pretty fun.
Nice.
You know, I went to his log cabin in Kentucky and his tomb in Illinois, and now I'm Lincoln'd out.
I just love that Sarah Vowell is like unapology geeky about American history, like specifically American history. Like she's just like nobody else would care about the stuff she cares about, but her and her nephew Owen always go, like it's always Owen's always involved on some level.
Yeah, so. She's an interesting character.
Yeah,
yeah. I think the reason why she focused on those three is because Robert Lincoln was at all three of them, which is just crazy. It's like, you know, what bad luck can you have?
Really.
Anywho, now I'll drop my Lincoln log.
And, gross. How about them Cubs?
Literally. All right.
Oh, man.
Today, I was all set. Why, I had recently read an interesting book on political campaigns called Whistle Stop, written by the current host of Face the Nation. I was going to regale everyone on the podcast with yet another tale of being a poli-sci major in the early aughts. You know, all that good fun stuff. But instead, you know, shrug. I even wrote down shrug. Because no one cares when I recommend nonfiction. All the books that I've gushed about will continue to gather dust until they're withdrawn in shame and disgust.
Oh, sad face.
But how does that differ from when you recommend fiction? Oh!
Another sick
burn. You're on fire with all the burns. Get another callback to something at the end of the episode. Why, I can hear all of our longtime listeners' eyes glaze over around the world as I talk about this.
Around the world, man.
Yeah, that's right.
Dedication.
All Gary from Burton. He's an international man of mystery. So instead, I'm going to recommend a 52-year-old movie called The Best Man. See? I'm relevant, gang. Pop culture.
I'm cool.
Because it says 2016, like 1950.
It's 1964. Based on the play by Gore Vidal, who has a blinking and you miss it cameo, The Best Man concerns two presidential candidates for an unnamed political party. I think it's the Democrats. During a national convention.
Today is the big day. At noon, balloting begins to choose the candidate who will almost certainly also become the president of the United States.
I may not like what they do in Mississippi, but I will fight for their right to run their state the way they want to.
Don't you understand? If I start to fight like cat, will I lose all meaning?
If you don't start to fight, you are finished.
Now we gotta release that psychiatric report.
I wouldn't, Joe.
Of course you wouldn't. That's why you're a loser and I'm not.
I promise only to quote Abraham Lincoln.
Lincoln started the Civil War. I hope you're less ambitious. It's par for the course trying to fool the people. But it's downright dangerous when you start fooling yourself.
May the best man win!
Henry Fonda plays William Russell, an intellectual who tends to overthink and overanalyze everything. Cliff Robertson plays Joe Cantwell, a brash blowhard who claims he is a man of the people, but in private is obviously out for himself. And Lee Tracy, in his final role, plays a former president whose support both candidates try to court throughout the film. Technically, there are actually about five candidates, but the other three we barely see throughout the movie, although I'm particularly fond of the idiot Dixiecrat guy. Hey, y'all! I'll get on anybody's ballot. Yeehaw! Fire guns. None make it on the first ballot. And a lot of the drama in the film is the dishing of dirt between the two rivals. Fonda had a nervous breakdown. Cliff Robertson may have had an affair during the war with a dude.
What?
Yeah. Poli-sci / history buffs will get a kick out of figuring out which character is based on which real-life figure. I particularly like that Fonda's character's tendencies to overthink and moralize every major decision is actually seen as a weakness, considering, you know, it's cast with Henry Fonda. Cliff Robertson's character really reminded me a lot of, this has been censored, which is a lot of fun. Also, the ending is a shocker. Let's put it that way. I saw The Best Man as part of the Belcourt's Politics in Black and White series this summer. I bet Evil Robot's going to edit the rest of this because I talk about the other films in the series include that we have as well. Failsafe, an edge-of-your-seat thriller, is basically a straight Dr. Strangelove. It's really good. We had that. Advising Consent, a drama about Senate confirmation, which is really good. It's directed by Otto Preminger. The Manchurian Candidate, which Bill talked about once.
Yeah.
Great film. Mm-hmm. And All the President's Men, which I still have yet to see.
You're kidding.
Yeah. The day it was to be shown, I went with a friend to see a terrible horror movie. I regret it to this day.
There's still time.
Yeah, we have it in the collection.
Yeah.
I can check it out.
You can go watch it right now.
Yeah, that's right. I'll see you guys. Slam door.
Walk.
Full effects.
I wish it really did. I wish when you like hand slam on table, I wish it just somebody said that instead of the sound that it makes.
Hand slap.
I like that. I like that world better.
Wait.
A little sarcasm.
What do you have, Amanda?
Okay.
A little sarcasm.
Nice segue. No. Really.
Okay, so I have to start by admitting that I hate politics.
Oh.
So it seems just like a bunch of talking heads making promises at me that they either can or won't keep in order to gain my favor. So that said, I do understand that voting is something that is very important to the health of our country. And as much as I dislike watching 85,000 million kajillion campaign commercials, I rounded up, I do educate myself enough to make an informed decision. And hopefully by the time this posts, I will have cast my early vote into the maelstrom that is the 2016 presidential election. So here's the weird thing, though. As much as I hate politics in the real world, I love watching them in entertainment land. So The West Wing was and probably is still one of my favorite all-time shows. Don't get me started on American President or 24, because where's David Palmer when you really need someone awesome to vote for? I also find that I enjoy fictional political thrillers, and that's what I found to talk about today. So I basically stumbled across The Candidate by Liz Wiles. When I was looking for something else in our catalog, it happened to be on this little scroll bar, and so I clicked on it. And once I read the description, I was hooked. Now, this is the second book in her Newsmaker series. The main character is Erica Sparks. And in the first book, The Newsmakers, Erica is plucked from obscurity and brought to GNN, the global news network, and quickly becomes its most popular news anchor. Now, she continues this role in The Candidate, but now instead of saving the world from her megalomaniacal boss, she's covering the presidential election.
Ooh, take that, Ted Turner.
That's right.
I mean, la-la.
Like TV. But the deeper she gets into the thick of things, the more it seems like something's not quite right with the lead Democratic candidate, Michael Ortiz. He seems like a great guy, Army veteran, former POW, but he also seems like he's kind of a puppet for his wealthy wife and her best friend. Now, can Erica figure out what's going on before the election? So, author Liz Wiles she's a correspondent on Fox News as well as an adjunct professor at New York Law School. She's actually written several other series of books I might have to go back and check out. I really liked the pacing of this one. The chapters were short, and both books were very suspenseful. It actually only took me about a day to read each of them because I didn't want to put them down, and I should also point out that there's a hurricane at the end of the first book, which was very exciting. Here's a hurricane!
And now we know why you recommended this one. Yeah.
That's why I liked it.
We know who you're voting for.
That's right. So if this
hurricane election, Matthew.
it was a hurricane in Florida, and I can't remember the name of it. It was a Category 5. It was very bad.
Whoa.
So if this election is stressing you out, and if it's not, can you please come tell me how you manage that? I highly recommend these books. They are excellent escapist fiction. Feel free to check them out on your way home from voting. It will be an excellent pick-me-up. Jeremy?
Okay. In the wake of Bill Clinton's 1992 victory over George H.W. Bush, a good friend of mine and I decided we were going to prank call some people, and I was going to do my best impression of Dana Carvey's George Bush impression. And so we called him up, and I said, how you doing? Want to thank you for voting? Except my voice hadn't changed yet, so I don't think that my impression is good now. I certainly don't think it was good when I was 12 years old. But called people and said, thank you for taking part in the democratic process. And just all this sort of stuff.
Because
we were cutting edge satirists in our day. Because you could also prank call people back then. Star 6-9, be damned. One guy told me, actually engaged with me as if I was real. And said it was like, you know, it's really time to move on and get to the work of, and get back to, you know, put the business of putting America to work and all this stuff. And I was like, okay. Not getting dead. But we didn't think about the actual issues in that campaign. We had no dog in that fight because we were, like I said, we were 12 years old. But I'm pretty sure my friend's dad voted for Ross Perot, so there you go. Meanwhile, while this was happening, there was a leprechaun named James Carville, and he was dancing a jig because his guy won the election. And you can watch this victory unfold in the documentary The War Room, directed by Chris Hedges and D.A. Pennebaker.
In the 1960s, D.A. Pennebaker's Don't Look Back and Monterey Pop captured the legends of rock and roll. Now, D.A. Pennebaker and Chris Hedges bring us the making of the first president from the rock and roll generation.
Somebody who's been through a lot of tough elections, James Carville, is known as the Raging Cajun in the business.
Let me tell you what's at stake in this election.
It's about George Bush and the whole sleazy little cabal of them. You're going to get tax breaks for the wealthy. You're going to get a guy that doesn't know what a grocery store scanner is.
I'm getting sick and tired. I am every single night hearing one of these carping little liberal Democrats jumping all over my you-know-what.
I'm George Stephanopoulos. Director of Communications.
Bush was on the defensive. Another good night for Bill Clinton. Three debates, three wins.
I guarantee you that if you do this, you'll never work in Democratic politics again.
If we cannot believe anything he has said about his past, how can we believe anything he's saying about the future?
Well, I think Mary Mallon's got a good career in fiction writing when this is over.
I'm lost. I don't know where I'm supposed to go next.
Turn Perot off. I don't want to look at it. How are you? Nice to see you.
Stay focused. Talk about things that matter to people.
We love Hillary's new patriotism thing.
It's the economy, stupid.
Speak from your heart tonight. I mean, that's all that matters.
Read my lips.
It's the most famous broken promise in the history of American politics.
Let them spin. We will win.
He is so yesterday, if I think of an old calendar, I think of George Bush's face on it.
Landslide.
I like the way this thing feels.
They change the way campaigns are won. The War Room, from D.A. Pennybaker and Chris Hedges.
This is just the most American thing you can do.
D.A. Pennybaker also famously chronicled another winner, Bob Dylan, and in 1967's Don't Look Back. Ugh. So, look, we're supposed to stay neutral. We can't say anything controversial.
Censored.
So, Pennebaker also edited, he didn't direct, but he edited a 1960 documentary called Primary about JFK's election. And there were, at the time of Clinton's election, there were parallels. People were making parallels between Clinton and JFK because they were both young and et cetera, et cetera. Clinton's presidential
affairs.
Yeah, exactly. neutral.
All right.
Clinton's presidential victory was a first for Democrats since Jimmy Carter's election in 1976, and it represented a generational shift in American politics. So the generation, the greatest generation of World War II, George H.W. Bush, they were passing in the baton on reluctantly to guys who could have fought in Vietnam but did not. So the circle of life continued, and this film shows. But doesn't really focus on the candidate so much as it focuses on James Carville, who was like the lead strategist, and a baby-faced George Stephanopoulos. And they're sort of talking about strategies of how we're going to play this, and let's push this story, and let's say this, and they just keep repeating their message. They're talking to the media, and they're sort of showing us how the sausage is made in a political campaign. Fun fact, this is the second week in a row I've said how the sausage is made. I don't know what that means.
Fan of sausage?
Yeah, I guess so. I think I like it more than bacon. Controversial.
Oh, I'm not going to your party.
So, wow. So this film is an example of direct cinema, which basically does away with the narration and talking heads of most documentaries in favor of fly on the wall objectivity. So it's really remarkable because the film doesn't say anything. About Clinton himself, it doesn't sort of portray him as, this terrible person or this hopeful figure or anything. It's just sort of like, this is what a campaign does. And it's sort of, you're sort of detached from all the rhetoric and stuff and sort of just like, this is how you do it, not why you do it or what it means. Even when you hear the opening strains of Fleetwood Mac's Don't Stop, you're like, okay, there's Fleetwood Mac. So it's just all maneuvering and the mechanization of the then modern political campaign. So I think it sort of opened the door for the way campaigns are run now. Obviously, technology has changed a lot of stuff. In contrast to this film, The War Room shows the highs of American politics. 2016's Wiener shows the lows. So this,
I saw that recently.
This documentary started out as a chronicle of Anthony Weiner's return to politics after resigning from Congress amid a sexting scandal in 2011. And just as his campaign for mayor of New York City sort of seemed to be hitting his stride, he became embroiled again in another sexting scandal or an extension of the original one. Either way, things did not end well for him.
Why are they filming you?
I don't know. I most of the time, I don't know why they're filming.
Are you somebody I'm supposed to know?
It's Republicans wrapping their arms around Republicans rather than doing the right thing on behalf of the heroes.
It was an absolute pleasure to see a Democrat not cowering.
Married to one of Hillary Clinton's closest advisors.
You never back down from anybody.
A photo of an anonymous man's bulging underwear
was tweeted from Congressman Weiner's account.
Today, I am announcing my resignation from Congress.
The punchline is true about me. I did the dumb thing, but I did a lot of other things too. running for mayor was the straightest line to clean up the mess that I had made.
This is Anthony Weiner calling. Yes, I'm not Anthony Weiner, the one running for mayor.
Why do you think you deserve the second chance?
I didn't want to answer.
I'm giving you the answer.
I thought you were thinking about it.
I'm talking words.
What I'm going to try to talk about is the issues facing New York City.
Are more women going to come to vote?
Just a quick optics thing. You will look happy.
Don't push up, Anthony.
Show it to me again.
Oh my God.
I can't believe I gave the press the finger.
How many women were there? Can you remember?
What I would like to talk about is housing in the Bronx. Any questions about that?
Why should we trust your judgment?
We're going to try to look like we're holding together as a group.
I am profoundly sorry. And for that, I am profoundly sorry.
Does your wife's absence say anything?
What is wrong with you?
What is he so afraid of?
Your brother said that your father never hugged you.
Do you believe you're suffering from any sort of addiction?
What are you, the referee over there?
We are staying calm and managing the situation.
You're a real scumbag, Anthony.
Takes one to know one, jackass.
Why didn't he just walk?
I'm gonna be brutally honest
with you.
There's no chance to win anymore.
Thought it was going pretty well.
It's really apocalyptic right now. But at a certain point, you've got to say, look, I don't quit.
This is the worst. Doing a documentary on my scandal.
In a way, I was sort of...
Carlos Danger.
Yeah. In a way, yeah. He becomes a punchline.
It's like, you know, his name's silly enough. Let's go, I need a sillier name as a cover.
Right.
Exactly.
So, a lot of balls drawn for office with a name like that.
So in a way, I thought it was sort of inspiring that he kind of kept fighting. Like, he would go to these meetings and say, like, I want to get make the middle class in New York City, you know, great. And people are like, how about the time you sent a picture of your penis? And, you know, and people didn't want to hear anything he had to say. They're just like, you disgusting pig, and, you know, whatever. So it's just sort of interesting that he kind of kept going. But then at the same time, he kind of comes across as really unhinged. And we see him sort of at his best and his worst. He's talking to his campaign about the scandal and how he's let him down and stuff. And they're all trying to do damage control. And then he's on cable news kind of losing his mind about, like, maybe I'll punch you in the face or whatever. And then like, he's watching himself on television and sort of laughing at it. And, like, his wife, who is noted Hillary Clinton advisor Huma Abedin, she sort of stands by with this poker face that still somehow conveys how angry and sad she is.
It's this whole weird, like, tragedy, the whole movie for her.
Yeah.
It's like the, like, first 30 minutes she's helping his campaign.
Yeah.
She's, like, using her, you know, she actually talked in front of the cameras, which she'd never done before.
Mm-hmm.
And she's, like, really supportive of her husband. And then he does Sexy Scandal again, and then she disappears.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and then she has this, like...
Yeah, she's, you can tell that she's
stony, but
yes.
But at the same time, it's like you can tell what's going on. And there's one time where she's like getting coffee and stuff out of fixing herself a drink or whatever. And one of the filmmakers holding the camera says, like, how's it going? And she gives this big smile and she goes, it's like a living nightmare. And then she walks out of the room and I was like, oh my God, it's just horrendous. Not just in a personal sort of like, this is, look what you have wrought on your personal life. So it was a really sad movie. And he has been in the news again in recent months because he doesn't know how to learn things. And in August, it was announced that he and his wife were getting divorced. So these two movies are very different, but sort of interesting compliments to one another. I actually watched them back to back, which is not something I ever do. But I finished Wiener, and I was like, man, I think I should watch The War Room now.
Yeah, I've been meaning to watch War Room. I heard it's really good.
It's great. It's great. I recommend people check it out. Hey, guys.
Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Jeremy.
What do we do on Tickled by Fancy?
Well, maybe the library has it. Maybe the library doesn't. But either way, it's Tickling Our Fancy.
Bill?
Tickling My Fancy is a 6-part television event that is airing on the Pop TV called Wolf Creek.
According to the map, it's Billabong, a
5 miles ahead.
It's paradise.
What's your line of work, sir?
Me? Oh, I shoot fish. Pigs, donkeys, camels, tourists.
My family's missing. She's got a gunshot wound.
It was a man. Why did he choose us?
People do crazy things out there in the Never Never.
I promise you, I'll find him. And I'll make it pay.
So there's people here. They're all gone missing. Bodies never found, mostly tourists. Same killer.
This country's too big, okay? You're not gonna find him.
You have to go where he goes.
She had a bee in her bonnet about some fellow in a blue truck.
You've seen a demon.
Hey, I'm looking for a friend of mine, American Sheila. Blonde hair, not bad looking.
What are you gonna do with her when you find her?
Good question.
In a lot of danger.
He's strong. 10 times tougher than they are and 100 times tougher than you feel.
Who are you really looking for out here? We've got plenty of demons out here. What you gonna do about yours?
Wolf Creek begins with an American family on vacation in northern Australia and becomes the unsuspecting target of Mick Taylor, a sadistic serial killer who hunts and kills tourists down in the outback.
And used to play guitar for the Rolling Stones.
Okay. A sole survivor is Eve Thorogood of one of the attacks, a college student who has an obsession to bring the killer to justice. So far, I've really enjoyed the series. It airs on Pop TV Fridays at 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. That's on my Comcast channel. It's 177. But if you go to Google and type in Pop, it can tell you what your cable network or satellite it shows on. And you can also catch up with the series. It's only 2 shows in. On demand. It's a lot like Deliverance in that sense. It captures the Australian outback. It's very beautiful, but there's this wonderful sinisterness to it. So that's what's tickling my fancy. Sarah.
Any banjos?
No.
Darn.
This is Australia.
Get him, mate.
We got kangaroo. Yeah.
You got pretty mouth.
I was going to say outback, but
let's put a shrimp on his baby.
A lot of flies in this episode. So they're supporting characters.
Sure.
Okay. Low-hanging fruit.
Okay. Whew. All right. Moving on now. Okay, I'm continuing this political party. The long list I was given when I typed in political movies into Google was overwhelming. Some I'd heard of, some not so much. Some serious, like we already mentioned, the Manchurian Candidate and the American President. Some definitely not so serious. Like one of my favorites I thought I'd revive. What do you get when you add an ambitious, wanting-to-please employee on a campaign with the candidate's dim brother? You get Black Sheep.
Al Donnelly might just be the next governor of Washington State.
All the way to the Capitol!
There's only one small problem. His brother, Mike.
Marquis doing here?
His heart is in the right place.
Ah!
Unfortunately,
okay, see ya.
The rest of him never is.
Oh my God!
You've got to keep this bozo under wraps.
So now they have to find someone.
Then I am your man.
To keep him under control.
Okay, good first day.
I want you to do exactly as I tell you.
Yeah, okay, keep talking.
I know a place way outside of town.
Bunk beds.
I got dibs on tap.
Okay.
I got dibs on top bunk.
Shut up!
So what do you want to do today?
No!
What's that black thing?
Whoa! What are you doing? Give these caught on my belt!
Boy, I feel like a horse's patoot.
Paramount Pictures presents...
Are you or are you not the Black Angel of Death?
Chris Farley.
Power to the people!
God, I'm a dead man.
David Spade.
Hey, gang. Is there an Opie convention in town?
The nitrous oxide's leaking into the car.
In a new comedy from the director of Wayne's World.
Check this out. This whole fridge is held up here just by this plug.
Black Sheep.
You okay?
I'm just dandy. I got a bowl of chocolate pudding in my underpants.
We didn't have any pudding in there, buddy.
There's one in every family.
This is Tommy Boy's movie twin with Chris Farley and David Spade with almost parallel storylines. But I don't care. Tommy Boy is one of my favorite comedies. Trust me, I've thought about this long and hard, and that's my go-to movie for any reason. Especially when my brother and I are on an airplane and the flight attendants are going through their safety procedures. He's a big dumb animal, isn't he, folks? But that summarizes the similarities between the two movies. Farley's accident-prone character plays the brother of the candidate running for governor in Washington State. Tim Matheson of Animal House fame plays Farley's older brother running for governor. Farley's character, Mike, means well and tries to help his brother's campaign, but sadly fails miserably. That's when David Spade's character Steve comes in. Trying to prove himself to hopefully get a nicer, cushier job, he agrees to keep Mike under wraps for the rest of the campaign, but somehow Mike is an unstoppable force of nature.
I am. Category Mac.
Pretty much Farley's regular character. While I'll admit I like Tommy Boy better, this movie still has several iconic scenes that crack me up, like when the nitrous oxide boosters leak into the squad car that Mike and Steve borrow to get to the governor's victory party. Unknowingly, the guys become rather stoned and get pulled over by a cop. When the cop confronts them about how fast they were going, they didn't know. They guessed 65. The cop's response, 7. You were going 7 miles an hour. And most people pull over to the side of the road, referring to the fact that they parked the car in the middle of the median. This movie was made just after Tommy Boy and was one of the last few Farley made before he died. Sad face. But if you like politics, sort of, but you love humor, you'll appreciate this movie. I'd say check it out from us. I just recommended that the library order it because we didn't have it, and they are. Yay!
Hooray!
Thank you, library.
Yeah, thank you. Till then, if you have Netflix, it's available for streaming there. Mike?
Remember, I'm trying on new coats.
There I was going to say, is that
fat
like
man in a little coat?
It's interesting. Tim Matheson recently played Reagan on a National Geographic movie.
That's right, yeah.
Killing Reagan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard that was pretty good, too.
Yeah.
That's funny. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a Bill O'Reilly joint. Censored. We're recording this during Shocktober, gang, and let me say that for me this year, it's been kind of a dud. Why, there's still a few days left, and I have some hopes, but so far there's nothing this Shocktober that I'd shout from the rooftops that everyone should go out and enjoy. So instead, I'm going to recommend the most shocking thing of all. Music you wouldn't expect me to like. Ha 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 ha.
Celine Dion, what?
My heart will go on.
It's a cappella. You know,
I can't get enough of
recitations of poetry.
Other songs that she likes. Isn't she like in Vegas now?
Yep.
She is.
They did a CBS This Morning special on her.
I mean, I'd go for Britney Spears, but stay for Celine Dion. Anyway, today I'm going to recommend a band called Cavern of Antimatter. Tim Gaines' new band, which he formed a few years after Stereolab dissolved.
Oh.
If Stereolab was influenced by, say, lounge music and space-age bachelor pad of the early 60s, Cavern of Antimatter feels a lot more like synthy, like 70s, you know. I've heard that they're more krautrock, but I can't really confirm that since I don't know that much krautrock.
Racist.
I love it.
Damn those Germans. I'll be mentioning a more jazzy / quick song off their recent album during year-end roundup. Oh, but for now, here's a song I discovered this morning called Solar Diamond off their EP, Blood Drums. It took me a few lessons, but I'm really digging it.
Yeah. You know, I mean, all I know is Autobahn song from the band.
Kraftwerk?
That one. What you got, Amanda?
Wait, you're done? I wasn't ready for that. I'm sorry. Okay.
I'm done now.
So you guys usually notice that I try to stay on topic of the week with my tickle, my fancy. So this week I'm going to let you decide how closely I decide to follow my own rule. Now, I've been working my way through Michael Connelly's Harry Bosch series on audiobook, but I recently had to wait on the next book in the series because someone was being a stupid head and hogging it, and I had to wait. So instead, I downloaded Orange is the New Black. It's been on my to-be-read pile for a while, so I figured it would be a good one to kind of help me pass the time until Harry came in. But I didn't expect to like it so much. I do think it helped that I had a good audio reader in Cassandra Campbell. Now, author Piper Kerman was a well-to-do waspy girl from Connecticut who thought she'd have some fun with her globetrotting friend slash lover slash drug dealer after she graduated from Smith College. Somehow, over the course of events, she transported a suitcase full of money from the U.S. to Belgium for a major African drug kingpin, you know, like you do. And so this act committed in the 1990s eventually cost her 15 months in a federal prison. And Orange is the New Black tells the story of what happened to her inside Danbury Minimal Security Prison. Now, I think part of the reason that I liked it was that I could identify with Piper. She's only a few years older than me. And, you know, granted, my family is more middle class waspy from Indiana than upper class waspy from Connecticut. But, you know, still.
But the drugs and all the stuff.
I was going to say, I also still in my travels have somehow managed not to take a suitcase of drug money across international borders. But, you know, there's still time.
You always just run guns.
You never know. You have to watch me. You never know. So I will admit that I've always kind of had a phobia about being erroneously arrested. And so I think it was kind of comforting to know that if Piper could survive in prison, I could too, you know, should the situation ever arise. Now, the book was pretty popular when it was released in 2010, so much so that Netflix actually made it into a TV series. And I've watched about half of the first season, and I think it's good. I don't like it quite as much as the book. The TV show sensationalizes a lot of things quite a bit more than what actually happened in the book. But, you know, yeah. I guess that's TV for you. Happy Election Day.
I watched the first episode, and I was like,
I don't like the main character actress either. I don't like the one that plays Piper.
That's about a season and a half, and it does seem a lot like this couldn't have possibly have happened in real life.
Like, yeah, there's a lot more girl-on-girl action. That didn't really, Piper was like, it didn't really happen that way, because her friend was a lady friend.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, that wouldn't affect her that much, but I don't know. Like, yeah. I just feel like they took, like, every prison stereotype, and they're like, here, women's prison. We're going to do that now. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's what I don't like, but we'll see. The book was good, though. Jeremy?
I found an interview with Jonathan Lethem, who I've only read a little bit of his work, but I found he has written about comic books and stuff, and I found a quote from him in this interview on Vulture, and we'll post a link to the interview. It's a long quote. I don't have to read all of it, but I wanted to read. He very succinctly describes what I think about comic books, and especially comic books versus superhero movies, and it's very nice when someone else can say what you're feeling because you don't know how to express your feelings properly. So he said, I have a very strong belief that superhero movies have nothing to do with comic books and that this is the case at a deep formal and structural level. What makes a page of a comic book a deep and mysterious artifact is the stillness and the blank space between the panels, the gutters as they're called. Comics have an extremely baroque relationship to the idea of time because a page is a series of static moments that have to be activated by the reader in the blank space between the panels. And it's really in the blank space in those gutters where the action is. That's where the mind is going. And I this is something I've read before and completely agree with, because there is a sense of motion. Like, if you're reading something that's really good, even if it's not a strict, like, grid layout or whatever, it's still that is exactly it. And then the interviewer follows it up and says, does that also apply to more intellectually ambitious graphic novels? And he says, one of the things I've noticed in this whole period of gentrification of the comic book, which also is a really great phrase, is that all the people who didn't read them growing up and were handed Mouse or Fun Home and are told this is something really important and you're going to love it, they have to work really hard to read them. Reading a comic is a very difficult reading act because it's learned by little children. People don't realize that they've accomplished something intricate. But when you look at a page of captions, drawing, word balloons, and maybe also thought balloons, and that page is arranged in 6 stacked panels, but maybe those panels break the ordinary axis sometimes too, you are thrust into a series of problematic reading decisions. You have to activate that page at your own speed by your own procedure of deciding, do I look at the drawing first and try to absorb the visual meaning? Do I read the caption? Do I read what they're saying and think about it like it's a play or a movie? It's actually totally beeped up and really exciting. It's like reading squared. That's a very long block of text that I just read. But really good. I really like what he's saying there and totally agree with him. So good job.
I would agree with that, because I've noticed the more comic books I've read lately, like, I'm amazed at how long it takes me to read one. Mm-hmm. Like, you think there's 30 pages, okay, 10 minutes and I'm done. But, I mean, it really does. You kind of have to live in it a little bit.
It's a different style of reading. And I don't think I ever thought about that because, well, I mean, I did think about it when I was starting to read comics, because I was like, okay, which way do I go?
Which bubble
still,
comes from?
Yeah, I still make mistakes sometimes, but yeah, it does kind of throw you off. But then I've been doing it for a long time, so I have practice in it. Who's got them? Who wants them?
Not I.
Who wants them?
Because
I got
I perfectly hosted and everywhere.
Well, let me. Oh.
It's show correction.
Hubris corner.
Let me move down to the second item on my list rather than the first one. This comes from Evil Robot. Mike is obviously envious, not jealous, of my hosting skills. Also,
maybe I just didn't care.
we did some additional fact checking, and the somewhere between science and superstition line did come from The Exorcist, from the trailer from The Exorcist. So
I almost barfed pea soup thinking that I supported Touch on the Dark Side.
Also, Bill, you said to Amanda, nice German accent, but she was doing a French accent. But I thought you were making a joke.
I did too.
That's
what I thought.
That's why I said maybe.
Evil Robot doesn't analyze humor.
The robot.
He used to
work in
this
humor module. Emotions,
no
context. Sarcasm?
Spitting out sparks.
I'll hold up a sarcasm sign.
There was also. I just thought that would be. Humor.
It seemed like that's what you were doing, because otherwise it was like, well, that was weird. But let's move on.
Anywho.
Also, Evil Robot says that his refusal to fact check the name of that one comic book is a slow ball pitch for the sickest of burns. I almost said sickest of weak burns because, oh gosh, wow, the sun got me. Wow, I touched a toaster that was hot 2 hours ago. What a burn.
Those are dangerous.
I said the name of the comic book in the segment. It was Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D. Our listeners heard it. That's what's important. I'm just kidding around. It was a pretty sick burn, though. Nice segue.
No, really.
Boo burns.
Okay. Does anyone else have any corrections? Oh, good. Excellent. For more information about being good, you can go to
www.nashville.com.
And our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
Woo! Everyone, that time. We can subscribe. We can subscribe to the Pop-matic podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS. Maybe you could too. Maybe. Maybe. Probably not. Next week.
Pumpkin.
The pumpkin spice.
Pumpkin.
Yeah.
The
six.
Must flow.
Pumpkin
chunkin.
The six spice.
Pumpkin.
Pumpkin spice. I would care a lot more about the Spice Girls than Pumpkin Spice.
Brothers, brothers, common yar, have had our share of censorship problems. But we are not against censorship because we realize there is always the danger of something being said. Many people feel the censorship is a violation of freedom of speech. Bull feathers. Censorship is not unconstitutional. Censors have a right to censor what you hear. The Bill of Rights says nothing about freedom of hearing.